of you from now on."
She took off, and they began the steep descent. In many places, the trail all but disappeared, leaving them to find their own way down. At times, they had to dismount and lead the horses on foot, holding onto trees to keep from falling down the slope. The ground was scattered with loose rocks, which made the footing treacherous. The ordeal left them hot and irritable, despite the cold. They stopped to rest when they reached the bottom near midday. The Anora River veered to their left and flowed northward. A biting wind scoured the land, whipping them unmercifully. The soil was parched, and dirt flew into their eyes. It unnerved Aragorn how flat everything was. The plains were unbroken by hummocks or mounds. He had lived his entire life surrounded by mountains and hills. Without them, he felt exposed and vulnerable, like a mouse under an eagle's keen eye. The trail split in three once it reached the plains. The first branch turned north towards Siunon, one of the greatest northern cities. The second one led straight across the plains, and the last went south. They examined all three for traces of the Razak and eventually found their tracks, heading directly into the grasslands. "It seems they've gone to Yazwak," said Brom with a perplexed air. "Where's that?"
"Due east and 4 days away, if all goes well. It's a small village situated by the Ninor River."
He gestured at the Anora, which streamed away from them to the north.
"Our only supply of water is here. We'll have to replenish our water skins before attempting to cross the plains. There isn't another pool or stream between here and Yazwak."
The excitement of the hunt began to rise within Aragorn. In a few days, maybe less than a week, he would use his arrows to avenge Garrow's death. And then... he refused to think about what might happen afterward. They filled the water skins, watered the horses, and drank as much as they could from the river. Saphira joined them and took several gulps of water. Fortified, they turned eastward and started across the plains. Aragorn decided that it would be the wind that drove him crazy first. Everything that made him miserable, his chapped lips, parched tongue, and burning eyes, stemmed from it. The ceaseless gusting followed them throughout the day. Evening only strengthened the wind instead of subduing it. Since there was no shelter, they were forced to camp in the open. Aragorn found some scrub brush, a short, tough plant that thrived on harsh conditions, and pulled it up. He made a careful pile and tried to light it, but the woody stems only smoked and gave off a pungent smell. Frustrated, he tossed the tinderbox to Brom. "I can't make it burn, especially with this blasted wind. See if you can get it going, otherwise dinner will be cold." Brom knelt by the brush and looked at it critically. He rearranged a couple of branches, then struck the tinderbox, sending a cascade of sparks onto the plants. There was smoke, but nothing else. Brom scowled and tried again, but his luck was no better than Aragorn's.
"Brisinger!"
he swore angrily, striking the flint again. Flames suddenly appeared, and he stepped back with a pleased expression.
"There we go. It must have been smouldering inside."
They sparred with mock swords while the food cooked. Fatigue made it hard on both of them, so they kept the session short. After they had eaten, they lay next to Saphira and slept, grateful for her shelter. The same cold wind greeted them in the morning, sweeping over the dreadful flatness. Aragorn's lips had cracked during the night. Every time he smiled or talked, beads of blood covered them. Licking them only made it worse. It was the same for Brom. They let the horses drink sparingly from their supply of water before mounting them. The day was a monotonous trek of endless plodding. On the third day, Aragorn woke well rested. That, coupled with the fact that the wind had stopped, put him in a cheery humor. His high spirits were dampened, however, when he saw the sky ahead of them was dark with thunderheads. Brom looked at the clouds and grimaced.
"Normally I wouldn't go into a storm like that, but we're in for a battering no matter what we do, so we might as well get some distance covered."
It was still calm when they reached the storm front. As they entered its shadow, Aragorn looked up. The thundercloud had an exotic structure, forming a natural cathedral with massive arched roof. With some imagination he could see pillars, windows, soaring tiers and snarling gargoyles. It was a wild beauty. As Aragorn lowered his gaze, a giant ripple raced toward them through the grass, flattening it. It took him a second to realize that the wave was a tremendous blast of wind.
Brom saw it too, and they hunched their shoulders, preparing for the storm. The gale was almost upon them when Aragorn had a horrible thought and twisted in his saddle, yelling both with his voice and mind, "Saphira, land!" Brom's face grew pale. Overhead they saw her dive toward the ground. "She's not going to make it." Saphira angled back the way they had come to gain time. As they watched, the Tempest's wrath struck them like a hammer blow. Aragorn gasped for breath and clenched the saddle as a frenzied howling filled his ears. Cadoc swayed and dug his hoofs into the ground, mane snapping in the air. The wind tore at their clothes with invisible fingers while the air darkened with billowing clouds of dust. Aragorn squinted, searching for Saphira. He saw her land heavily and then crouch, clenching the ground with her talons. The wind reached her just as she started to fold her wings. With an angry yank, it unfurled them and dragged her into the air. For a moment she hung there, suspended by the storm's force. Then it slammed her down on her back. With a savage wrench, Aragorn yanked Cadoc around and galloped back up the trail, goading the horse with both heels and mind. "Saphira!" he shouted. "Try to stay on the ground! I'm coming!" He felt a grim acknowledgement from her. As they neared Saphira, Cadoc balked, so Aragorn leapt down and ran toward her. His bow banged against his head. A strong gust pushed him off balance and he flew forward, landing on his chest. He skidded, then got back up with a snarl, ignoring the deep scrapes in his skin. Saphira was only 3 yards away, but he could get no closer because of her flailing wings. She struggled to fold them against the overpowering gale. He rushed at her right wing, intending to hold it down, but the wind caught her, and she somersaulted over him. The spines on her back missed his head by inches. Saphira clawed at the ground, trying to stay down. Her wings began to lift again, but before they could flip her, Aragorn threw himself at the left one. The wing crumpled in at the joints, and Saphira tucked it firmly against her body. Aragorn vaulted over her back and tumbled onto the other wing. Without warning, it was blown upward, sending him sliding to the ground. He broke his fall with a roll, then jumped up and grabbed the wing again. Saphira started to fold it, and he pushed with all of his strength. The wind battled with them for a second, but with one last surge, they overcame it. Aragorn leaned against Saphira, panting. "Are you all right?" He could feel her trembling. She took a moment to answer.
I think so.
She sounded shaken.
"Nothing's broken. I couldn't do anything. The wind wouldn't let me go. I was helpless."
With a shudder, she fell silent. He looked at her, concerned.
"Don't worry. You're safe now."
He spotted Cadoc a ways off, standing with his back to the wind. With his mind, Aragorn instructed the horse to return to Brom. He then got on to Saphira. She crept up the road, fighting the gale, while he clung to her back and kept his head down. When they reached Brom, he shouted over the storm, "Is she hurt?" Aragorn shook his head and dismounted. Cadoc trotted over to him, nickering. As he stroked the horse's long cheek, Brom pointed at a dark curtain of rain, sweeping toward them in rippling grey sheets. "What else?" cried Aragorn, pulling his clothes tighter. He winced as the torrent reached them. The stinging rain was cold as ice. Before long, they were drenched and shivering. Lightning lanced through the sky, flickering in and out of existence. Mile-high blue bolts streaked across the horizon, followed by peals of thunder that shook the ground below. It was beautiful, but dangerously so. Here and there, grass fires were ignited by strikes, only to be extinguished by the rain. The wild elements were slow to abate, but as the day passed, they wandered elsewhere. Once again, the sky was revealed and the setting sun glowed with brilliance. As beams of light tinted the clouds with blazing colors, everything gained a sharp contrast, brightly lit on one side, deeply shadowed on the other. Objects had a unique sense of mass. Grass stalks seemed sturdy as marble pillars. Ordinary things took on an unearthly beauty. Aragorn felt as if he was sitting inside a painting. The rejuvenated earth smelled fresh, clearing their minds and raising their spirits. Saphira stretched, craning her neck, and roared happily. The horses skittered away from her, but Aragorn and Brom smiled at her exuberance. Before the light faded, they stopped for the night in a shallow depression. Too exhausted to spar, they went straight to sleep.
Revelation at Yazwak. Although they had managed to partially refill the waterskins during the storm, they drank the last of their water that morning. I hope we're going in the right direction, said Aragorn, crunching up the empty water bag, because we'll be in trouble if we don't reach Azwak today.
Brom did not seem disturbed. I've travelled this way before. Yazwak will be in sight before dusk.
Aragorn thought doubtfully. Perhaps you see something I don't. How can you know that when everything looks exactly the same for leagues around?
Because I am guided not by the land, but by the stars and sun. They will not lead us astray. Come, let us be off. It is foolish to conjure up woe where none exists. Yazwak will be there.
His words proved true. Sephira spotted the village first, but it was not until later in the day that the rest of them saw it as a dark bump on the horizon. Yazwak was still very far away. It was only visible because of the plain's uniform flatness. As they rode closer, a dark winding line appeared on either side of the town and disappeared in the distance.
The Ninor River, said Brom, pointing at it.
Aragorn pulled Kadok to a stop. Sephira will be seen if she stays with us much longer. Should she hide while we go into Yazwak? Brom scratched his chin and looked at the town.
See that bend in the river? Have her wait there. It's far enough from Yazwak so no one should find her, but close enough that she won't be left behind. We'll go through the town, get what we need, and then meet her.
I don't like it, said Sephira, when Aragorn had explained the plan. This is irritating, having to hide all the time like a criminal.
You know what would happen if we were revealed?
She grumbled, but gave in, and flew away low to the ground. They kept a swift pace in anticipation of the food and drink they would soon enjoy. As they approached the small houses, they could see smoke from a dozen chimneys, but there was no one in the streets. An abnormal silence enveloped the village. By unspoken consent, they stopped before the first house. Aragorn abruptly said,
There aren't any dogs barking.
No.
Doesn't mean anything, though.
No.
Aragorn paused.
Someone should have seen us by now.
Yes.
Then why hasn't anyone come out?
Brom squinted at the sun.
Could be afraid.
Could be, said Aragorn.
He was quiet for a moment.
And if it's a trap, the Razak might be waiting for us.
We need provisions and water.
There's the Ninor.
Still need provisions.
True.
Aragorn looked around.
So we go in?
Brom flicked his reins.
Yes, but not like fools. This is the main entrance to Yazwak. If there's an ambush, it'll be along here. No one will expect us to arrive from a different direction.
Around to the side, then? Asked Aragorn.
Brom nodded and pulled out his sword, resting the bare blade across his saddle. Aragorn strung his bow and knocked an arrow. They trotted quietly around the town and entered it cautiously. The streets were empty except for a small fox that darted away as they came near.
The houses were dark and foreboding, with shattered windows. Many of the doors swung on broken hinges. The horses rolled their eyes nervously.
Aragorn's palm tingled, but he resisted the urge to scratch it. As they rode into the center of town, he gripped his bow tighter, blanching.
"Gods above!" he whispered.
A mountain of bodies rose above them, the corpses stiff and grimacing. Their clothes were soaked in blood and the churned ground was stained with it. Slaughtered men lay over the women they had tried to protect, mothers still clasped their children, and lovers who had tried to shield each other rested in death's cold embrace. Black arrows stuck out of them all. Neither young nor old had been spared, but worst of all was the barbed spear that rose out of the peak of the pile, impaling the white body of a baby. Tears blurred Aragorn's vision and he tried to look away, but the dead faces held his attention. He stared at their open eyes and wondered how life could have left them so easily.
What does our existence mean when it can end like this?
A wave of hopelessness overwhelmed him. A crow dipped out of the sky like a black shadow and perched on the spear. It cocked its head and greedily scrutinized the infant's corpse.
Oh, no, you don't, snarled Aragorn as he pulled back the bowstring and released it with a twang.
With a puff of feathers, the crow fell over backward, the arrow protruding from its chest. Aragorn fit another arrow to the string, but nausea rose from his stomach, and he threw up over Kadok's side. Brom patted him on the back. When Aragorn was done, Brom asked gently, "Do you want to wait for me outside, Yazwak?"
"No, I'll stay," said Aragorn shakily, wiping his mouth.
He avoided looking at the gruesome sight before them.
"Who could have done?"
He could not force out the words. Brom bowed his head. "Those who love the pain and suffering of others. They wear many faces and go by many disguises, but there is only one name for them. Evil. There is no understanding it. All we can do is pity and honor the victims." He dismounted Snowfire and walked around, inspecting the trampled ground carefully. "The Razak passed this way," he said slowly. "But this wasn't their doing. This is Urgal work. The spear is of their make. A company of them came through here, perhaps as many as 100. It's odd. I know of only a few instances when they have gathered in such—" He knelt and examined a footprint intently. With a curse, he ran back to Snowfire and leapt onto him. "Ride," he hissed tightly, spurring Snowfire forward. "There are still Urgals here." Aragorn jammed his heels into Cadoc. The horse jumped forward and raced after Snowfire. They dashed past the houses and were almost to the edge of Yazwak when Aragorn's palm tingled again. He saw a flicker of movement to his right, then a giant fist smashed him out of the saddle. He flew back over Cadoc and crashed into a wall, holding onto his bow only by instinct. Gasping and stunned, he staggered upright, hugging his side. An Urgal stood over him, face set in a gross leer. The monster was tall, thick, and broader than a doorway, with grey skin and yellow, piggish eyes. Muscles bulged on his arms and chest, which was covered by a too small breastplate. An iron cap rested over the pair of ram's horns curling from his temples, and a round shield was bound to one arm. His powerful hand held a short, wicked sword. Behind him, Aragorn saw Brom rein in Snowfire and start back, only to be stopped by the appearance of a second Urgal, this one with an axe. "Run, you fool!" Brom cried to Aragorn, cleaving at his enemy. The Urgal in front of Aragorn roared and swung his sword mightily. Aragorn jerked back with a startled yelp as the weapon whistled past his cheek. He spun around and fled toward the center of Yazwak, heart pounding wildly. The Urgal pursued him, heavy boots thudding. Aragorn sent a desperate cry for help to Saphira, then forced himself to go even faster. The Urgal rapidly gained ground despite Aragorn's efforts, large fangs separated in a soundless bellow. With the Urgal almost upon him, Aragorn strung an arrow, spun to a stop, took aim and released. The Urgal snapped up his arm and caught the quivering bolt on his shield. The monster collided with Aragorn before he could shoot again, and they fell to the ground in a confused tangle. Aragorn sprang to his feet and rushed back to Brom, who was trading fierce blows with his opponent from Snowfire's back. "Where are the rest of the Urgals?" wondered Aragorn frantically. "Are these two the only ones in Yazwak?" There was a loud smack, and Snowfire reared, whinnying. Brom doubled over in his saddle, blood streaming down his arm. The Urgal beside him howled in triumph and raised his axe for the death blow. A deafening scream tore out of Aragorn as he charged the Urgal head first. The Urgal paused in astonishment, then faced him contemptuously, swinging his axe. Aragorn ducked under the two-handed blow and clawed the Urgal's side, leaving bloody furrows. The Urgal's face twisted with rage. He slashed again, but missed as Aragorn dived to the side and scrambled down an alley. Aragorn concentrated on leading the Urgals away from Brom. He slipped into a narrow passageway between two houses, saw it was a dead end and slid to a stop. He tried to back out, but the Urgals had already blocked the entrance. They advanced, cursing him in their gravelly voices. Aragorn swung his head from side to side, searching for a way out, but there was none. As he faced the Urgals, images flashed in his mind, dead villagers piled around the spear, and an innocent baby who would never grow to adulthood. At the thought of their fate, a burning, fiery power gathered from every part of his body. It was more than a desire for justice. It was his entire being rebelling against the fact of death, that he would cease to exist. The power grew stronger and stronger until he felt ready to burst from the contained force. He stood tall and straight, all fear gone. He raised his bow smoothly. The Urgals laughed and lifted their shields. Aragorn sighted down the shaft as he had done hundreds of times and aligned the arrowhead with his target.
The energy inside him burned at an unbearable level. He had to release it or it would consume him. A word suddenly leapt unbidden to his lips. He shot, yelling, "Brisinger!" The arrow hissed through the air, glowing with a crackling blue light. It struck the lead Urgal on the forehead, and the air resounded with an explosion. A blue shockwave blasted out of the monster's head, killing the other Urgal instantly. It reached Aragorn before he had time to react, and it passed through him without harm, dissipating against the houses. Aragorn stood panting, then looked at his icy palm. The Gedwe Ignazia was glowing like white-hot metal, yet even as he watched, it faded back to normal. He clenched his fist. Then a wave of exhaustion washed over him. He felt strange and feeble, as if he had not eaten for days. His knees buckled, and he sagged against a wall. Admonishments. Once a modicum of strength returned to him, Aragorn staggered out of the alley, skirting the dead monsters. He did not get far before Cadoc trotted to his side. "Good, you weren't hurt," mumbled Aragorn. He noticed, without particularly caring, that his hands were shaking violently and his movements were jerky. He felt detached, as if everything he saw were happening to someone else. Aragorn found Snowfire, nostrils flared and ears flat against his head, prancing by the corner of a house, ready to bolt. Brom was still slumped motionless in the saddle. Aragorn reached out with his mind and soothed the horse. Once Snowfire relaxed, Aragorn went to Brom. There was a long, blood-soaked cut on the old man's right arm. The wound bled profusely, but it was neither deep nor wide. Still, Aragorn knew it had to be bound before Brom lost too much blood. He stroked Snowfire for a moment, then slid Brom out of the saddle. The weight proved too much for him, and Brom dropped heavily to the ground. Aragorn was shocked by his own weakness. A scream of rage filled his head. Saphira dived out of the sky and landed fiercely in front of him, keeping her wings half raised. She hissed angrily, eyes burning. Her tail lashed, and Aragorn winced as it snapped overhead.
"Are you hurt?"
she asked, rage boiling in her voice. "No," he assured her, as he laid Brom on his back. She growled and exclaimed,
"Where are the ones who did this? I will tear them apart!"
He wearily pointed in the direction of the alley. "It'll do no good. They're already dead."
"You killed them?"
Saphira sounded surprised. He nodded. "Somehow." With a few terse words he told her what had happened while he searched his saddlebags for the rags in which Zarok had been wrapped. Saphira said gravely,
"You have grown."
Aragorn grunted. He found a long rag and carefully rolled back Brom's sleeve. With a few deft strokes he cleaned the cut and bandaged it tightly.
"I wish we were still in Palancar Valley," he said to Saphira. "There at least I knew what plants were good for healing. Here I don't have any idea what will help him."
He retrieved Brom's sword from the ground, wiped it, then returned it to the sheath on Brom's belt.
"We should leave," said Saphira. "There may be more Urgals lurking about."
"Can you carry Brom? Your saddle will hold him in place and you can protect him."
"Yes, but I'm not leaving you alone."
"Fine, fly next to me, but let's get out of here."
He tied the saddle onto Saphira, then put his arms around Brom and tried to lift him. But again his diminished strength failed him.
"Saphira, help!"
She snaked her head past him and caught the back of Brom's robe between her teeth. Arching her neck, she lifted the old man off the ground like a cat would a kitten and deposited him onto her back. Then Aragorn slipped Brom's legs through the saddle straps and tightened them. He looked up when the old man moaned and shifted. Brom blinked blearily, putting a hand to his head. He gazed down at Aragorn with concern.
"Did Saphira get here in time?"
Aragorn shook his head.
"I'll explain it later. Your arm is injured. I bandaged it as best I could, but you need a safe place to rest."
"Yes," said Brom, gingerly touching his arm. "Do you know where my sword—" "Ah, I see you found it."
Aragorn finished tightening the straps.
"Saphira is going to take you and follow me by air."
"Are you sure you want me to ride her?"
asked Brom.
I can ride Snowfire. Not with that arm. This way, even if you faint, you won't fall off.
Brom nodded.
I'm honored.
He wrapped his good arm around Saphira's neck, and she took off in a flurry, springing high into the sky. Aragorn backed away, buffeted by the eddies from her wings, and returned to the horses. He tied Snowfire behind Cadoc, then left Yazwak, returning to the trail and following it southward. It led through a rocky area, veered left, and continued along the bank of the Nenor River. Ferns, mosses, and small bushes dotted the sides of the path. It was refreshingly cool under the trees, but Aragorn did not let the soothing air lull him into a sense of security. He stopped briefly to fill the waterskins and let the horses drink. Glancing down, he saw the Razak spore.
At least we're going in the right direction.
Saphira circled overhead, keeping a keen eye on him. It disturbed him that they had seen only two Urghels. The villagers had been killed and Yazwak ransacked by a large horde, yet where was it?
Perhaps the ones we encountered were a rearguard or a trap left for anyone who was following the main force.
His thoughts turned to how he had killed the Urghels.
An idea, a revelation, slowly wormed its way through his mind. He, Aragorn, farm boy of Palancar Valley, had used magic.
Magic!
It was the only word for what had happened. It seemed impossible, but he could not deny what he had seen. Somehow I'd become a sorcerer or wizard.
But he did not know how to use this new power again or what its limits and dangers might be.
How can I have this ability? Was it common among the riders? And if Brom knew of it, why didn't he tell me?
He shook his head in wonder and bewilderment. He conversed with Saphira to check on Brom's condition and to share his thoughts. She was just as puzzled as he was about the magic.
Saphira, can you find us a place to stay? I can't see very far down here.
While she searched, he continued along the Nenor. The summons reached him just as the light was fading.
Come!
Saphira sent him an image of a secluded clearing in the trees by the river. Aragorn turned the horses in the new direction and nudged them into a trot. With Saphira's help, it was easy to find, but it was so well hidden that he doubted anyone else would notice it. A small, smokeless fire was already burning when he entered the clearing. Brom sat next to it, tending his arm, which he held at an awkward angle. Saphira was crouched behind them, her body tense. She looked intently at Aragorn and asked,
"Are you sure you aren't hurt?"
"Not on the outside, but I'm not sure about the rest of me."
"I should have been there sooner."
"Don't feel bad. We all made mistakes today. Mine was not staying closer to you."
Her gratitude for that remark washed over him. He looked at Brom.
"How are you?"
The old man glanced at his arm.
"It's a large scratch and hurts terribly, but it should heal quickly enough. I need a fresh bandage. This one didn't last as long as I'd hoped."
They boiled water to wash Brom's wound. Then Brom tied a fresh rag to his arm and said,
"I must eat, and you look hungry as well. Let's have dinner first, then talk."
When their bellies were full and warm, Brom lit his pipe.
"Now, I think it's time for you to tell me what transpired while I was unconscious. I am most curious."
His face reflected the flickering firelight, and his bushy eyebrows stuck out fiercely. Aragorn nervously clasped his hands and told the story without embellishment. Brom remained silent throughout it, his face inscrutable. When Aragorn finished, Brom looked down at the ground. For a long time, the only sound was the snapping fire. Brom finally stirred.
"Have you used this power before?"
"No. Do you know anything about it?"
"A little."
Brom's face was thoughtful.
"It seems I owe you a debt for saving my life. I hope I can return the favor some day. You should be proud. Few escape unscathed from slaying their first Urghel. But the manner in which you did it was very dangerous. You could have destroyed yourself and the whole town."
"It wasn't as if I had a choice," said Aragorn defensively. "The Urghels were almost upon me. If I had waited, they would have chopped me into pieces."
Brom stamped his teeth vigorously on the pipe stem.
"You didn't have any idea what you were doing."
"Then tell me," challenged Aragorn. "I've been searching for answers to this mystery, but I can't make sense of it. What happened? How could I have possibly used magic? No one has ever instructed me in it or taught me spells.
Brom's eyes flashed. This isn't something you should be taught, much less use.
Well, I have used it, and I may need it to fight again. But I won't be able to if you don't help me.
What's wrong? Is there some secret I'm not supposed to learn until I'm old and wise?
Or maybe you don't know anything about magic.
Boy, roared Brom, you demand answers with an insolence rarely seen. If you knew what you asked for, you would not be so quick to inquire. Do not try me.
He paused, then relaxed into a kinder countenance. The knowledge you ask for is more complex than you understand.
Aragorn rose hotly in protest. I feel as though I've been thrust into a world with strange rules that no one will explain.
I understand, said Brom. He fiddled with a piece of grass. It's late, and we should sleep, but I will tell you a few things now to stop your badgering. This magic, for it is magic, has rules like the rest of the world. If you break the rules, the penalty is death, without exception. Your deeds are limited by your strength, the words you know, and your imagination.
What do you mean by words? Asked Aragorn.
More questions, cried Brom. For a moment I had hoped you were empty of them, but you are quite right in asking. When you shot the Urgles, didn't you say something?
Yes, Brisinger. The fire flared and a shiver ran through Aragorn. Something about the word made him feel incredibly alive.
I thought so. Brisinger is from an ancient language that all living things used to speak. However, it was forgotten over time and went unspoken for eons in Alagaesia until the elves brought it back over the sea. They taught it to the other races, who used it for making and doing powerful things. The language has a name for everything, if you can find it.
But what does that have to do with magic? Interrupted Aragorn.
Everything. It is the basis for all power. The language describes the true nature of things, not the superficial aspects that everyone sees. For example, fire is called Brisinger. Not only is that a name for fire, it is the name for fire. If you are strong enough, you can use Brisinger to direct fire to do whatever you will. And that is what happened today.
Aragorn thought about it for a moment. Why was the fire blue? How come it did exactly what I wanted if all I said was fire?
The color varies from person to person. It depends on who says the word. As to why the fire did what you wanted, that's a matter of practice. Most beginners have to spell out exactly what they want to happen. As they gain more experience, it isn't as necessary. A true master could just say water and create something totally unrelated, like a gemstone. You wouldn't be able to understand how he had done it, but the master would have seen the connection between water and the gem and would have used that as the focal point for his power. The practice is more of an art than anything else. What you did was extremely difficult.
Sephira interrupted Aragorn's thoughts.
Brom is a magician. That's how he was able to light the fire on the plains. He doesn't just know about magic, he can use it himself.
Aragorn's eyes widened.
You're right.
Ask him about this power, but be careful of what you say. It is unwise to trifle with those who have such abilities. If he is a wizard or sorcerer, who knows what his motives might have been for settling in Carver Hall?
Aragorn kept that in mind as he said carefully, Sephira and I just realized something. You can use this magic, can't you? That's how you started the fire our first day on the plains.
Brom inclined his head slightly. I am proficient to some degree.
Then why didn't you fight the Urgles with it? In fact, I can think of many times when it would have been useful. You could have shielded us from the storm and kept the dirt out of our eyes.
After refilling his pipe, Brom said, Some simple reasons, really. I am not a rider, which means that even at your weakest moment you are stronger than I. And I have outlived my youth. I am not as strong as I used to be. Every time I reach for magic, it gets a little harder.
Aragorn dropped his eyes abashed. I'm sorry.
Don't be, said Brom as he shifted his arm.
It happens to everyone.
Where did you learn to use magic?
That is one fact I'll keep to myself. Suffice it to say it was in a remote area and from a very good teacher. I can, at the very least, pass on his lessons.
Brom snuffed his pipe with a small rock.
I know that you have more questions, and I will answer them, but they must wait until morning.
He leaned forward, eyes gleaming.
Until then, I will say this to discourage any experiments. Magic takes just as much energy as if you used your arms and back. That is why you felt tired after destroying the Urgles. And that is why I was angry. It was a dreadful risk on your part. If the magic had used more energy than was in your body, it would have killed you. You should use magic only for tasks that can't be accomplished the mundane way.
How do you know if a spell will use all your energy? Asked Aragorn, frightened.
Brom raised his hands.
Most of the time you don't. That's why magicians have to know their limits well, and even then they are cautious. Once you commit to a task and release the magic, you can't pull it back, even if it's going to kill you. I mean this as a warning. Don't try anything until you've learned more. Now, enough of this for tonight.
As they spread out their blankets, Saphira commented with satisfaction,
"We are becoming more powerful, Aragorn, both of us. Soon no one will be able to stand in our way."
"Yes, but which way shall we choose?"
"Whichever one we want,"
she said smugly, settling down for the night.
Magic is the simplest thing.
"Why do you think those two Urgles were still in Yazwak?" asked Aragorn, after they had been on the trail for a while.
"There doesn't seem to be any reason for them to have stayed behind."
"I suspect they deserted the main group to loot the town. What makes it odd is that, as far as I know, Urgles have gathered in force only two or three times in history. It's unsettling that they're doing it now."
"Do you think the Razak caused the attack?"
"I don't know. The best thing we can do is continue away from Yazwak at the fastest pace we can muster. Besides, this is the direction the Razak went, south."
Aragorn agreed. "We still need provisions, however. Is there another town nearby?"
Brom shook his head. "No, but Saphira can hunt for us if we must survive on meat alone. This swath of trees may look small to you, but there are plenty of animals in it. The river is the only source of water for many miles around, so most of the plains animals come here to drink. We won't starve."
Aragorn remained quiet, satisfied with Brom's answer. As they rode, loud birds darted around them, and the river rushed by peacefully. It was a noisy place, full of life and energy. Aragorn asked,
"How did that Urgle get you? Things were happening so fast I didn't see."
"Bad luck, really," grumbled Brom. "I was more than a match for him, so he kicked Snowfire. The idiot of a horse reared and threw me off balance. That was all the Urgle needed to give me this gash."
He scratched his chin.
"I suppose you're still wondering about this magic. The fact that you've discovered it presents a thorny problem. Few know it, but every rider could use magic, though with differing strengths. They kept the ability secret, even at the height of their power, because it gave them an advantage over their enemies. Had everyone known about it, dealing with common people would have been difficult. Many think the king's magical powers come from the fact that he is a wizard or sorcerer. That's not true. It's because he is a rider."
"What's the difference? Doesn't the fact that I used magic make me a sorcerer?"
"Not at all. A sorcerer, like a shade, uses spirits to accomplish his will. That is totally different from your power. Nor does that make you a magician, whose powers come without the aid of spirits or a dragon. And you're certainly not a witch or wizard, who get their powers from various potions and spells." "Which brings me back to my original point, the problem you've presented. Young riders like yourself were put through a strict regimen designed to strengthen their bodies and increase their mental control. This regimen continued for many months, occasionally years, until the riders were deemed responsible enough to handle magic. Up until then, not one student was told of his potential powers. If one of them discovered magic by accident, he or she was immediately taken away for private tutoring.
It was rare for anyone to discover magic on his own. He inclined his head toward Aragorn, though they were never put under the same pressure you were.
Then how were they finally trained to use magic? Asked Aragorn. I don't see how you could teach it to anyone. If you had tried to explain it to me 2 days ago, it wouldn't have made any sense.
The students were presented with a series of pointless exercises designed to frustrate them. For example, they were instructed to move piles of stones using only their feet, fill lever-draining tubs full of water and other impossibilities. After a time, they would get infuriated enough to use magic. Most of the time, it succeeded. What this means, Brom continued, is that you will be disadvantaged if you ever meet an enemy who has received this training. There are still some alive who are that old, the king for one, not to mention the elves. Any one of those could tear you apart with ease.
What can I do, then?
There isn't time for formal instruction, but we can do much while we travel, said Brom. I know many techniques you can practice that will give you strength and control, but you cannot gain the discipline the riders had overnight. You, he looked at Aragorn humorously, will have to amass it on the run. It will be hard in the beginning, but the rewards will be great. It may please you to know that no rider your age ever used magic the way you did yesterday with those two Urgals.
Aragorn smiled at the praise. Thank you. Does this language have a name?
Brom laughed. Yes, but no one knows it. It would be a word of incredible power, something by which you could control the entire language and those who use it. People have long searched for it, but no one has ever found it.
I still don't understand how this magic works, said Aragorn. Exactly how do I use it?
Brom looked astonished. I haven't made that clear.
No.
Brom took a deep breath and said, To work with magic, you must have a certain innate power, which is very rare among people nowadays. You also have to be able to summon this power at will. Once it is called upon, you have to use it or let it fade away. Understood? Now, if you wish to employ the power, you must utter the word or phrase of the ancient language that describes your intent. For example, if you hadn't said Brisinger yesterday, nothing would have happened.
So I'm limited by my knowledge of this language.
Exactly, crowed Brom. Also, while speaking it, it's impossible to practice deceit.
Aragorn shook his head. That can't be. People always lie. The sounds of the ancient words can't stop them from doing that.
Brom cocked an eyebrow and said, Feather blaka, eco weonata ni et hena ono. Blaka, iom iet lam.
A bird suddenly flitted from a branch and landed on his hand. It trilled lightly and looked at them with beady eyes. After a moment he said, Ether, and it fluttered away. How did you do that? Asked Aragorn in wonder.
I promised not to harm him. He may not have known exactly what I meant, but in the language of power the meaning of my words was evident. The bird trusted me, because he knows what all animals do, that those who speak in that tongue are bound by their word.
And the elves speak this language?
Yes.
So they never lie?
Not quite, admitted Brom. They maintain that they don't, and in a way it's true. But they have perfected the art of saying one thing and meaning another. You never know exactly what their intent is, or if you have fathomed it correctly. Many times they only reveal part of the truth and withhold the rest. It takes a refined and subtle mind to deal with their culture.
Aragorn considered that. What do personal names mean in this language? Do they give power over people?
Brom's eyes brightened with approval.
Yes, they do.
Those who speak the language have two names. The first is for everyday use and has little authority, but the second is their true name and is shared with only a few trusted people. There was a time when no one concealed his true name, but this age isn't as kind. Whoever knows your true name gains enormous power over you. It's like putting your life into another person's hands. Everyone has a hidden name, but few know what it is.
How do you find your true name? Asked Aragorn.
Elves instinctively know theirs. No one else has that gift. The human riders usually went on quests to discover it,
or found an elf who would tell them, which was rare, for elves don't distribute that knowledge freely, replied Brom.
I'd like to know mine, Aragorn said wistfully.
Brom's brow darkened. Be careful. It can be a terrible knowledge. To know who you are without any delusions or sympathy is a moment of revelation that no one experiences unscathed. Some have been driven to madness by that stark reality. Most try to forget it. But as much as the name will give others power, so you may gain power over yourself, if the truth doesn't break you.
And I'm sure that it would not, stated Saphira.
I still wish to know, said Aragorn, determined.
You are not easily dissuaded. That is good, for only the resolute find their identity. But I cannot help you with this. It is a search that you will have to undertake on your own. Brom moved his injured arm and grimaced uncomfortably.
Why can't you or I heal that with magic? Asked Aragorn.
Brom blinked. No reason. I just never considered it because it's beyond my strength. You could probably do it with the right word, but I don't want you to exhaust yourself.
I could save you a lot of trouble and pain, protested Aragorn.
I'll live with it, said Brom flatly. Using magic to heal a wound takes just as much energy as it would to mend on its own. I don't want you tired for the next few days. You shouldn't attempt such a difficult task yet.
Still, if it's possible to fix your arm, could I bring someone back from the dead?
The question surprised Brom, but he answered quickly, Remember what I said about projects that will kill you? That is one of them. Riders were forbidden to try to resurrect the dead for their own safety. There is an abyss beyond life where magic means nothing. If you reach into it, your strength will flee and your soul will fade into darkness. Wizards, sorcerers, and riders all have failed and died on that threshold. Stick with what's possible. Cuts, bruises, maybe some broken bones, but definitely not dead people.
Aragorn frowned. This is a lot more complex than I thought.
Exactly, said Brom. And if you don't understand what you're doing, you'll try something too big and die. He twisted in his saddle and swooped down, grabbing a handful of pebbles from the ground. With effort, he righted himself, then discarded all but one of the rocks. See this pebble?
Yes.
Take it.
Aragorn did, and stared at the unremarkable lump. It was dull black, smooth, and as large as the end of his thumb. There were countless stones like it on the trail.
This is your training.
Aragorn looked back at him, confused. I don't understand.
Of course you don't, Brom said impatiently. That's why I'm teaching you and not the other way around. Now stop talking or we'll never get anywhere. What I want you to do is lift the rock off your palm and hold it in the air for as long as you can. The words you're going to use are Stena Risa. Say them.
Stena Risa.
Good. Go ahead and try.
Aragorn focused sourly on the pebble, searching his mind for any hint of the energy that had burned in him the day before. The stone remained motionless as he stared at it, sweating and frustrated. How am I supposed to do this? Finally, he crossed his arms and snapped, This is impossible!
No, said Brom gruffly. I'll say when it's impossible or not. Fight for it. Don't give in this easily. Try again.
Frowning, Aragorn closed his eyes, setting aside all distracting thoughts. He took a deep breath and reached into the farthest corners of his consciousness, trying to find where his power resided. Searching, he found only thoughts and memories, until he felt something different. A small bump that was a part of him, yet not of him. Excited, he dug into it, seeking what it hid. He felt resistance, a barrier in his mind, but knew that the power lay on the other side. He tried to breach it, but it held firm before his efforts. Growing angry, Aragorn drove into the barrier, ramming against it with all of his might, until it shattered like a thin pane of glass, flooding his mind with a river of light. Stena Risa, he gasped. The pebble wobbled into the air over his faintly glowing palm. He struggled to keep it floating, but the power slipped away and faded back behind the barrier. The pebble dropped to his hand with a soft plop, and his palm returned to normal. He felt a little tired, but grinned from his success.
Not bad for your first time, said Brom.
Why does my hand do that? It's like a little lantern.
No one's sure, Brom admitted. The riders always preferred to channel their power through whichever hand bore the Gedwe Ignazia. You can use your other palm, but it isn't as easy. He looked at Aragon for a minute.
I'll buy you some gloves at the next town, if it isn't gutted. You hide the mark pretty well on your own, but we don't want anyone to see it by accident. Besides, there may be times when you won't want the glow to alert an enemy.
Do you have a mark of your own?
No, only riders have them, said Brom. Also, you should know that magic is affected by distance, just like an arrow or a spear. If you try to lift or move something a mile away, it'll take more energy than if you were closer. So if you see enemies racing after you from a league away, let them approach before using magic. Now, back to work. Try to lift the pebble again.
Again?
Asked Aragon weakly, thinking of the effort it had taken to do it just once.
Yes, and this time be quicker about it.
They continued with the exercises throughout most of the day. When Aragon finally stopped, he was tired and ill-tempered. In those hours he had come to hate the pebble and everything about it. He started to throw it away, but Brom said, Don't. Keep it. Aragon glared at him, then reluctantly tucked the stone into a pocket.
We're not done yet, warned Brom. So don't get comfortable.
He pointed at a small plant.
This is called Deloise.
From there on, he instructed Aragon in the ancient language, giving him words to memorize, from Vonder, a thin, straight stick, to the morning star, Aedale. That evening they sparred around the fire. Though Brom fought with his left hand, his skill was undiminished. The days followed the same pattern. First, Aragon struggled to learn the ancient words and to manipulate the pebble. Then in the evening he trained against Brom with the fake swords. Aragon was in constant discomfort, but he gradually began to change, almost without noticing. Soon the pebble no longer wobbled when he lifted it. He mastered the first exercises Brom gave him and undertook harder ones, and his knowledge of the ancient language grew. In their sparring, Aragon gained confidence and speed, striking like a snake. His blows became heavier, and his arm no longer trembled when he warded off attacks. The clashes lasted longer as he learned how to fend off Brom. Now, when they went to sleep, Aragon was not the only one with bruises. Saphira continued to grow as well, but more slowly than before. Her extended flights, along with periodic hunts, kept her fit and healthy. She was taller than the horses now, and much longer. Because of her size and the way her scales sparkled, she was altogether too visible. Brom and Aragon worried about it, but they could not convince her to allow dirt to obscure her scintillating hide. They continued south, tracking the Razak. It frustrated Aragon that no matter how fast they went, the Razak always stayed a few days ahead of them. At times he was ready to give up, but then they would find some mark or print that would renew his hope. There were no signs of habitation along the Ninor or in the plains, leaving the three companions undisturbed as the days slipped by. Finally, they neared Darrat, the first village since Yazwak. The night before they reached the village, Aragon's dreams were especially vivid. He saw Garrow and Roran at home, sitting in the destroyed kitchen. They asked him for help rebuilding the farm, but he only shook his head with a pang of longing in his heart.
I'm tracking your killers, he whispered to his uncle.
Garrow looked at him askance and demanded, Do I look dead to you?
I can't help you, said Aragon softly, feeling tears in his eyes.
There was a sudden roar, and Garrow transformed into the Razak.
Then die,
they hissed and leapt at Aragon. He woke up feeling ill and watched the stars slowly turn in the sky.
All will be well, little one,
said Saphira gently.
Darrat. Darrat was on the banks of the Ninor River, as it had to be to survive. The village was small and wild-looking, without any signs of inhabitants. Aragon and Brom approached it with great caution. Saphira hid close to the town this time. If trouble arose, she would be at their sides within seconds. They rode into Darrat, striving to be silent. Brom gripped his sword with his good hand, eyes flashing everywhere. Aragorn kept his bow partially drawn as they passed between the silent houses, glancing at each other with apprehension.
"This doesn't look good,"
commented Aragorn to Saphira. She did not answer, but he felt her prepared to rush after them. He looked at the ground and was reassured to see the fresh footprints of children.
"But where are they?"
Brom stiffened as they entered the center of Darad and found it empty. Wind blew through the desolate town, and dust devils swirled sporadically. Brom wheeled Snowfire about.
"Let's get out of here. I don't like the feel of this."
He spurred Snowfire into a gallop. Aragorn followed him, urging Cadoc onward. They advanced only a few strides before wagons toppled out from behind the houses and blocked their way. Cadoc snorted and dug his hooves in, sliding to a stop next to Snowfire. A swarthy man hopped over the wagon and planted himself before them, a broadsword slung at his side and a drawn bow in his hands. Aragorn swung his own bow up and pointed it at the stranger, who commanded,
"Halt! Put your weapons down! You're surrounded by 60 archers! They'll shoot if you move!"
As if on cue, a row of men stood up on the roofs of the surrounding houses.
"Stay away, Saphira!" cried Aragorn. "There are too many. If you come, they'll shoot you out of the sky. Stay away!"
She heard, but he was unsure if she would obey. He prepared to use magic.
"I'll have to stop the arrows before they hit me or Brom."
"What do you want?" asked Brom calmly.
"Why have you come here?" demanded the man.
"To buy supplies and hear the news. Nothing more. We're on the way to my cousin's house in Dras Leona."
"You're armed pretty heavily."
"So are you," said Brom. "These are dangerous times."
"True."
The man looked at them carefully.
"I don't think you mean us ill, but we've had too many encounters with Urgals and bandits for me to trust you only on your word."
"If it doesn't matter what we say, what happens now?" countered Brom.
The men on top of the houses had not moved. By their very stillness, Aragorn was sure that they were either highly disciplined or frightened for their lives. He hoped it was the latter.
"You say you only want supplies. Would you agree to stay here while we bring what you need? Then pay us and leave immediately?"
"Yes."
"All right,"
said the man, lowering his bow, though he kept it ready. He waved at one of the archers who slid to the ground and ran over.
"Tell him what you want."
Brom recited a short list and then added, "Also, if you have a pair of gloves that would fit my nephew, I'd like to buy those too." The archer nodded and ran off.
"The name's Trevor," said the man, standing in front of them. "Normally I'd shake your hand, but under the circumstances I think I'll keep my distance. Tell me, where are you from?"
"North," said Brom. "But we haven't lived in any place long enough to call it home."
"Have Urgals forced you to take these measures?"
"Yes," said Trevor.
"And worse fiends.
Do you have any news from other towns? We receive word from them rarely, but there have been reports that they are also beleaguered."
Brom turned grave.
"I wish it wasn't our lot to bring you these tidings.
Nearly a fortnight ago we passed through Yazuak and found it pillaged. The villagers had been slaughtered and piled together. We would have tried to give them a decent burial, but two Urgals attacked us."
Shocked, Trevor stepped back and looked down with tears in his eyes.
"Alas, this is indeed a dark day. Still, I don't see how two Urgals could have defeated all of Yazuak. The people there were good fighters. Some were my friends."
"There were signs that a band of Urgals had ravaged the town," stated Brom.
"I think the ones we encountered were deserters."
"How large was the company?"
Brom fiddled with his saddlebags for a minute.
"Large enough to wipe out Yazuak, but small enough to go unnoticed in the countryside. No more than 100 and no less than 50. If I'm not mistaken, either number would prove fatal to you."
Trevor wearily agreed.
"You should consider leaving," Brom continued. "This area has become far too perilous for anyone to live in peace."
"I know, but the people here refuse to consider moving. This is their home as well as mine, though I have only been here a couple of years, and they place its worth above their own lives."
Trevor looked at him seriously.
"We have repulsed individual Urgals, and that has given the townspeople a confidence far beyond their abilities. I fear that we will all wake up one morning without throats slashed."
The archer hurried out of a house with a pile of goods in his arms. He set them next to the horses and Brom paid him. As the man left, Brom asked, "Why did they choose you to defend Darrett?" Trevor shrugged. "I was in the King's army for some years."